Hello. Unfortunately, the first introduction to the podcast, me and Joe were standing next to a truck, which meant there was a bit of a buzzing noise in the background. Luckily, it's only the first introduction, it's just like less than a minute, and then the rest of it was recorded indoors, so it sounds absolutely fine. But when you hear that buzzing, unfortunately, it's a truck. There's nothing we can do. This is what happens when you record live. But hopefully, as long as you get past that, the rest of the podcast sounds absolutely perfecto. Okay, let's start.
Welcome to the Simon and Joe Film Show. I'm Joe.
I'm Simon.
And this is a weekly film podcast based in London town.
And this week's main review is going to be David O. Russell's Oscar-nominated The Fighter.
Starring Mark Wahlberg and, of course, Christian Bale, who you may know as Batman.
And then we're going to be talking about other reviews, which is going to be I Am Love, which is starring Tilda Swinton in
Italy. Lovely, lovely Tilda Swinton, speaking Italian and maybe Russian, we don't know. Uh-huh. And, of course, we'll finish off with
Exit Through the Gift Shop, Banksy's Oscar-nominated documentary, which we've been meaning to watch.
It has Banksy in it, but is it about Banksy or is it about Mr. Brainwash? I don't know, it's confusing. I mean, it's documentary, question mark, I think.
Exactly, mockumentary, hoaxymentary.
No, it's not a hoax.
No, it is a documentary.
I mean, listen to the review and you'll find out.
That's true.
News, Henry Cavill is Superman. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not going to tell you.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, it's a surprise.
Okay, surprise. We'll speculate on can
they do it?
Can Woody Allen still do it? The answer is no.
Well, we'll find out. We'll discuss that in a moment.
We will.
We've also got the top London box office, and we've got some of our social networking conversations.
Twitterers,
so if you've been tweeting this week or Facebooking,
Loggerers,
we might be mentioning some of your tweets and messages.
All of those people. All great people. And of course, we're right now outside the Clapham Picture House, Simon. How do you feel about our cinema in one word?
Clapham Picture House, incredible. My favourite cinema.
Really? In the world?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll debate that off air, and then after this, you'll get a review of The Fighter, you lucky people.
So this week our main film is David O. Russell's The Fighter.
Oscar nominated in several categories. Most interestingly, Best Supporting Actress, two nominations, Melissa Leo and Amy Adams.
And hitting against each other.
Fighting in the film, fighting in reality.
Indeed.
That's how it's working. And Christian Bale, the favourite, essentially, for Best Supporting Actor as the brother. I mean, tell us a story, Simon. I've already given us some background to what's going on with it at the moment.
Okay, well, it's funny, actually, because it opens like on this kind of documentary, as if they're making a documentary on famous The Pride of Lowell fighter, Dickie Ward.
Who's played by Christian Bale.
Yeah, and so we're finding him, and it's clear he's a bit of a druggie.
Yeah.
Bit of the old drugs. Takes the drugs.
He does.
The old crack cocaine.
But his brother, Mickey Ward, who's played by Mark Wahlberg, who is the lead, the fighter of the title, is not on drugs. He's big, he's pumped, and he is ready for a fight, a proper boxing match. I'm not saying he's a street brawler, he's a proper boxer.
Yeah.
And his brother, Dickie, is his trainer. It's tough, because it's Mickey and Dickie, and you sometimes got to get them, you got to get it straight in your mind, which one's Dickie and which one's Mickey.
Mickey Wahlberg, Dickie Bale.
Done,
easy.
Let's hear a clip.
No, you know what I'm doing. Sure, Alice and everybody else told you. I just wanted to tell you to face myself. I got no management. Mickey keeps my training now. It's all good.
Yeah. I got you fighting Alfonso Sanchez.
On HBO.
And you're proud of that.
Right.
What's your plan? How are you going to fight Sanchez?
I ain't here to talk about that.
What's your plan?
I am not here to talk about that.
Yes, you are.
You watch the fight and you'll see the plan.
Hey, Meg, what is it? You scared, embarrassed, because you don't even have a plan on your brother? Just tell me.
You gotta run against this guy. Let him punch himself out. Take him to the body, right? Get inside. Switch stances like you're gonna work his right. Hit him on the left.
You ain't me. All right, you can't be me. You had a hard enough time being you when you had your chance, and that's why you're in here. All right? I'll fight Sanchez the way I fight.
All right. So yeah. There's a bit of an indication.
I mean, what we're talking about here is we're talking about a family. Melissa Leo plays the mum.
Yeah.
And she's kind of the manager. They're all trying to ride the Mickey bandwagon, I would say, to success. They're asking him to fight. They get paid. And Dickie is training him, although obviously he's on a lot of drugs, so he's having problems.
And there's a conflict ultimately on that bandwagon in that to some extent, I think, you know, you're given the impression that maybe his mum kind of favours Dickie more, as Dickie, you know, constantly goes on about his how he knocked out Sugar Ray.
Knocked down.
Know, don't knock out.
Very, very careful about that.
There's
an element of mystery to the past, I think. Dickie struggles with kind of living up to that, which is why he's having such problems with drugs. Although, you know, he is he's very fast moving, and
that's right,
you know, he's a complex character to get your head around. Whereas Mark Wahlberg as Mickey is a very straight down the line,
pensive.
You know, he's trying to keep everyone happy. Same time, he just wants to get the job done.
And I think one thing which kind of breaks up or kind of disrupts the lifestyle, which is where we come in, is when Mark Wahlberg's Mickey meets Amy Adams' character, Charlene, and she is kind of the something new, which it changes his outlook and changes his perspective.
Yeah.
That, I mean, there's a number of things, but I think that's really the heart to this story.
Yeah, I think the Mickey and Dickie have sisters. They have, I don't know, five or six sisters who are very, you know, aggressive and always together. And, you know, and here's this new woman who is, you know, she's still aggressive, but she's more friendly and wants to give him some hope, I think. I mean, she works at a bar and she gets a lot of grief and she gives as good as she gets. So she's still verbally sparring with people, but she's got, you know, she's a... with the heart of gold, essentially. Yeah.
So, okay, let's get stuck in. What do you think, Joe? We watched it only the other night. I watched the Clapham Picture House.
I watched it at the Ritzy, as it happened. I mean, I went in, obviously, Oscar nominated, and I was kind of interested. Boxing films are tough,
I agree.
Sometimes, you know, there are some great boxing films out there. This is supposed to be, a very good one. It's got, one of the reviews says, the best boxing film since Rocky. And so I'm like, okay, well, that's great. Christian Bale has all this attention.
Was Raging Bull after Rocky?
Yeah,
it was. So is the implication there by that, you know, critic, that it's better than Raging Bull?
Yeah, that's one of the problems. This film is not better than Raging Bull. It's not better than Ali, and it's not better than Rocky. I'm not going to lie. I was disappointed.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
crikey.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this will come back to the issue of why David O. Russell has been nominated above Christopher Nolan for Best Director at the Oscars. There's nothing special about this film. It's full of cliche. I mean, I know it's based on a true story, so, you know, this stuff actually happened. But it was, you know, inevitably kind of predictable. All the best lines are in the trailer, and actually when you see them in their context, they're not as inspiring as they were in the trailer. It's really, I mean, Mark Wahlberg, he's put in a lot of effort, and I credit him for that, and, you know, but he's such a wet blanket. I mean, he's pushed from both sides, you know, one side Charlene, the other side his family, and he's like, I've got to keep everyone happy. I don't know how to. Oh, God. And, I was just, frankly, I was a bit bored. And I've got to say, you know, this is the point I want to make about David O. Russell. The boxing, which is where a boxing film kind of lives or dies, not that impressive until the last two fights. I was impressed by the last two fights. But other than that, it didn't really compel me in the way that Raging Bull compels, in the way that Rocky compels, in the way that Ali compels. They're kind of boring, like I say, until the last two, when I think he fights Sanchez and Neary are the last two fights. Those are the impressive fights. Those are where the tension is. But most of the time, David O. Russell doesn't really inject it with anything. He certainly doesn't inject it with any pace. He doesn't inject it with much of anything. I mean, there's some humour, a little bit of drama, but there's just not enough of anything. What about you, Simon? You're looking, you're grinning away there like you've got something to say.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I really liked it. I don't think it's the best of the nominees this year for Best Picture, but I thought it was really good. It's definitely worth being in there. I think it's interesting you point out about the boxing, because the fact of the matter is that I think in the first two-thirds of the film, I think we only really saw one match. And whereby he was beaten up. I mean, that was it. Mm. I mean, it was only the last act where we saw a hell of a lot of boxing, when he kind of went his own way, as it were. But the point is that I think it's... I mean, so I don't think it's so much about the boxing. I think it's not as operatic as Raging Bull. You know what I mean? I think the whole Rocky is about, you know what I mean, just to better yourself, who you are, and all that kind of very...
cliched nonsense.
Rocky we're talking about here.
I'm talking about the fight. I mean, you know, Rocky is cliché, but it knows it is. It defines some of those boxing clichés.
That's probably a good way to put it.
And it has the, "Yo, Adrian!"
Yeah, so it does have the Adrian bit. But the point is that with Rocky, I think, you know, that's that whole kind of positive, come on, you're kind of rooting for him. This isn't that type of film.
I didn't root for him.
I think in this film, what's interesting is that it's kind of... it's about people acknowledging their flaws and acknowledging their problems. And I think every single person, every single character has problems. Even Mark Wahlberg, I mean, we can go into his acting problems perhaps in a moment, but I think even with his character, his problem is that he's clinging to his family. I mean, sometimes it's tough, but he has to let go in the same way his mum has to let go.
Yeah,
and Christian Bale has to let go of his drugs. Well, and stop jumping out of windows. I mean, there's no need.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, you know, when we talk about the acting, obviously it's all very, you know, overwrought and angry. Everybody's angry at each other. And you know, that's kind of dull and repetitive, don't you think? I mean, I remember, there's also this kind of inspiring, like, you can do it. I remember the girl who plays his daughter, Mark Wahlberg's daughter.
Yes, yeah.
And she's like, "Okay, Daddy, I really believe in you." And I'm like, oh, God, did she really just say that?
Did you need the kid?
Didn't. It just, that kid just kind of drifts in and out and is completely pointless. And, you know, I guess I do have to give props to Christian Bale, who is great. I mean, the thing I noticed is, about halfway through, when he's in prison, I suddenly realised, oh, what? This is the guy that plays Batman.
Yeah, I saw the same.
He is completely different from Batman. Well done. So I think only...
it says how good an actor he is.
Well, you judge his performance in this based on the fact that, you know, he is an incredible Batman. And similarly, and completely different. And so similarly, when you see Amy Adams, you're like, alright, this is a girl who was in Doubt, and she's completely different from that. And Melissa Leo, you know, and has completely changed her appearance with the blonde back-combed hair. And so, you know, this is a woman who was Oscar-nominated for Frozen River, and now she's completely different. And you know, and that's kind of... And Mark Wahlberg, of course, generally plays a hero, but here he is, you know, physically he's different because he's obviously got into shape for this. But I don't, you know, apart from saying, oh, they look and act differently from what they have before,
yeah,
I don't see anything particularly impressive.
Well, the cast, I thought the casting was incredible, and the acting, I mean, ultimately the actors were incredible. I think Mark Wahlberg being the only concern, and me and Sarah had a bit of a debate about this, in that basically I felt that the role didn't require too much passion. He was supposed to be a bit restrained and a bit subdued.
I guess that's why he hasn't been Oscar nominated, because he is kind of subdued.
And I think the role is requiring that, whereas I'm sure you might feel this way, and Sarah feels that, fact of the matter is actually, Mark Wahlberg probably couldn't give it more passion, and it didn't give the impression that he could and he was being restrained. It gave the impression that he couldn't and he was just being a lame ass.
I didn't ever even got the sense that he wanted to be successful. He was just doing it for other people, and that's kind of that's the problem.
Yeah, no,
but maybe you're right, maybe that's what the role suggests. I was kind of bored.
But one thing I did have a problem with was the sisters, if I'm honest. They were a bit caricatured.
I think,
you know, to the point, you see, I mean, obviously they're part of the story, they're important to the story, and I think up until most points, it's fine, but the point when I realised how bad it, and how annoying it was when we got to that last fight, and it kind of cut away to the girls, like, cheering in front of a TV screen, and I was like, oh, go on, I don't want to see you, I want to see the fight, I want to see the people who are in the sports hall, I want to see that. I don't want to see the sisters who are annoying anyway, caricatured. Not much to them in their bloody cheap room, looking like plonkers. You know, I don't want to see that.
No,
and that was because I didn't rate them very highly. So I thought that was something where there was some comedy in it. But I think sometimes when they try to show all these different perspectives, they should have said, actually, let's focus on that relationship primarily and not show so much of
it. Yeah, I think actually for me, one of the most interesting relationships was the dad.
George.
Yeah, George. He was great because he was actually conflicted. He was about the only one kind of stuck and really being pulled between, I mean, obviously Mark Wahlberg was, but he was really pulled between two sides and trying to see everybody, you know, in a certain light, and that was great. I mean, I just want to pick up on one particular scene that happens about halfway through the film, where they're watching the documentary about Dickie, which is supposed to be about his comeback, but isn't actually about his comeback at all. It's something completely different. But it was so choreographed that everybody's watching the documentary, and it's like a turning point for everyone, and everyone comes to the realisation that, oh my God, what we believed isn't actually true. It's so telegraphed. I liked it, and it cut to somebody else watching it, and they were crying, and then it cut to someone else watching it, and you're like, all right, okay, so now their chat character's going to change. And it was like, it wasn't anything subtle about it. I mean, that is specifically the point. It's almost like Christian Bale gives up drugs at that point, and you know, that's just kind of stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, isn't it? You kind of think to yourself, come on, Wahlberg, it's clear as day you need to get away from those people. You don't need Charlene to point out. I mean, They're all so stupid and annoying and crap for you. I mean, it's clear as day.
And, you know, when I talk about repetitive, Charlene does point it out. And then, and then they just, you know, they go on a little bit. And then she has to point it out again. And they go on a little bit. And then she has to point it out again. And so, she must point out to him that his family are rubbish about 12 times in the film.
And we know it without even Charlene mentioning it. I don't want to knock it out. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very, I mean, I'd give it right up there probably 8 out of 10. I really did like it.
I didn't like it very much at all. And I wouldn't recommend it. It is kind of boring. There are better boxing films out there. The ones we've mentioned already today, all much, much better. And, you know, it's fine to spend, you know, but it's not something that I would revisit. To be honest, I'm now thinking Christian Bale shouldn't be winning Best Actor.
What?
Supporting Actor.
No, he should. Definitely should.
You know, Amy Adams and Melissa Leo, I don't think
Amy Adams should get it.
Okay, well, there you go. You're saying of the battle of those two, you're saying Adam should get it. I'm saying no. None of these people.
Unacceptable.
Not unacceptable, just, I mean, you know, it's a fine film, it's all right, but to be an Oscar-nominated film needs something special, and I don't think this has it.
Okay, some film news. First up, some sad news.
Yeah, John Barry, the Oscar-winning composer, best known, I guess, for the Bond films, has died.
He has passed.
77.
He also composed Out of Africa. Was it Midnight Cowboy?
Midnight Run.
Okay,
Born Free.
And Born Free. So that is a real loss. I mean, he's somebody who was involved with the Bond franchise from the very beginning. David Arnold looked up to him a lot and his stuff. So that's a real sad loss.
But and responsible for some, you know, fantastic scores. I mean, you talk about that Bond theme as, you know, just such an incredible tune.
Indeed.
And being reinvented and, you know, and the Bond themes, I mean, some of them are hit and miss, but he's really got some great quality in there.
Okay, but talking about James Bond,
some
crazy news.
The casting news,
The obvious stuff. Judi Dench is confirmed. That was the given, really. We knew that.
Yeah, she's the weight that holds it all together.
But
saying that Judi Dench is fat, obviously.
No.
I'm just saying gravitas. Her character has gravitas.
That makes more sense.
Thanks very much.
But Javier Bardem and Ralph Fiennes are apparently being considered for roles in the new James Bond.
And Rachel Weisz. All of them could be villains. I mean, that'd be like some kind of Spider-Man film where you had like three of the best actors in the world against James Bond. I don't think he could win. I think that would be it.
That might be it.
He would have to die.
Yeah, that would be the end of James Bond right there.
He'd be like, oh, I just fought Ralph Fiennes. I won. I just fought Javier Bardem. Just about won. Oh, and now I've got to fight Rachel Weisz as well. Oh, shit.
The worst thing they could do, though, is actually have people prize roles from other films. So James Bond pitted against the Nazi general in Schindler's List, and Ralph Fiennes could reprise that role.
Or the hitman from No Country for
Old
Men.
That's
scary.
And so you've got these two characters like back from the dead. Know what I mean? You know, making their point.
Maybe Rachel Weisz will be the wife, like she is in The Mummy, and The Mummy Returns.
Yeah.
And actually, she'll be on his side. She'll be like, "Hey, let's beat these guys."
Yeah, crazy.
Wow. This could be the worst Bond film ever.
Or it could be the best. Javier Bardem, I think, as a Bond villain, will possibly be the greatest decision ever made.
Okay.
Now, it's worth noting that in the last film, Quantum of Solace, the Quantum organisation was set up. Now, it's quite obvious that the Quantum group is pretty much Spectre. back in the day in From Rush With Love and Goldfinger, you had the Spectre organisation, and now they're setting up the Quantum organisation, which the bad guys in both Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale were a part of. So it'd be nice to think that Javier Bardem might in fact be the head of the Quantum. Or maybe Ralph Fiennes will be the head of the Quantum.
Like a...
Blofeld. So that'd be great to know.
Cracking stuff. Talking of heroes, we talk, of course, of Superman. Kind of the third part of the superhero trilogy when we talk about Batman and Spider-Man. Both played by British actors. And look at this, Superman as well. A Yabu Sucks America?
Well, yeah, this is Henry Cavill. And, you know, let's be honest, this is going... I mean... Superman, I don't know what to make of it.
It could be great.
Snyder. There's no way of telling.
Well done. I mean, you know, obviously Bryan Singer really messed it up. But, you know, I mean, Henry Cavill, interestingly, was up against Brandon Routh last time. And Brandon Routh, who I don't particularly, he was a pretty awful Superman. You know, he won. And now this time he's essentially lost. And Henry Cavill's in there. You know, I think it's interesting. Christopher Nolan is going to be involved as a mentor to Zack Snyder. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to make Superman dark or what they're going to do. But it's interesting casting. And apparently they're now casting for a female lead that isn't going to be Lois Lane. And there's names like Jessica Biel, who just lost out on Catwoman in there. Olivia Wilde, who is, of course, in Tron. You know, so some very good-looking women in there. And it'll be interesting. Now we've got a Superman to see who his opposite are. Because obviously Kate Bosworth was... I mean, she was even worse than Brandon Routh in Superman Returns. She was literally awful. And I think it's basically blown her career out of the water. She's nowhere, is she?
I've got no intention of seeing Superman Returns.
Oh.
I think it's... I mean, I'm going to pretend it didn't exist and just, you know, move on.
Okay,
you know,
well, that's best.
I might watch the original four. I mean, apparently 3 and 4 are bad, but I might watch those ones because it's Christopher Reeve. But I think I'll just forget it even existed and we'll just move on to the new one with Henry Cavill.
I saw someone else who should forget... and stop existing is Woody Allen.
Well,
he's made some films in the past, but he needs to stop. He's too old for this shit.
Well, he's not too old because Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris is going to be opening the 64th Cannes Film Festival. And I think...
Lucky Cannes.
It is indeed very lucky. Carla Bruni, a.k.a., you know, Nicolas Sarkozy's, is that right?
Yeah.
His wife.
So, Mrs.
Yeah, she's got a cameo role in it. Which
is that
might,
the reason you're going to see it?
That might be the reason why it's opening Cannes, perhaps.
Oh, right, okay.
But the fact of the matter is, I'd like to think it's because it's a bloody good film. And maybe...
You'd like to think that, but it's not going to be the case, is it, Simon? It's going to be because people still believe that it's the 70s and Woody Allen is a director who can write some funny lines. Turns out, he can't.
Look, I disagree with that completely. I think it's good news. And hopefully Woody Allen's made a
hopefully he's
cracking
back.
Good film.
Hopefully he's back after 30 years in the wilderness.
Vicky Christie
hopefully
and Barbara
he's
Lano
making
great.
A good film.
This is slander. Slander joke.
Rude.
Another interesting news point was the Directors Guild Awards. They actually...
Oh, we're on some Oscar talk now.
Now, this is interesting because, I mean, there's a lot of Oscar talk. We were debating whether to even include this in the news section because there's so many awards things going on.
But this is a big deal because, you know, the precedent is set.
Okay, so the Directors Guild of Award... Guild of America announced its award winners, and Tom Hooper, the director of King's Speech, took the big prize for Best Director. Now, what is really important about this, okay, is that the Directors Guild of America and the Academy have only gone different ways for Best Director 6 times in the last 6 decades.
Holy moly.
So that's like 60 years... Out of 60 things, only 6 of them have been wrong.
Well, that's 1 in 10, Simon.
1 in 10, indeed. So it is unlikely that Tom Hooper will lose this.
It's unlikely.
Looks like King's Speech is right on the way to winning, to sweeping the board this year.
The big news for me in the Best Director category is, of course, still that Christopher Nolan wasn't nominated. And having seen The Fighter, it's absolutely shocking that he was overlooked for David O. Russell. I mean, Christopher Nolan should obviously win. So, you know, the fact that he hasn't been nominated is offensive.
Okay, last news.
Yes.
Vanity Fair magazine was released.
Oh, the Hollywood special, Simon. I know you love to read
every
it.
Every year, Joe purchases this, and we get to have a gander at the front sleeve.
Yeah, there's some classic stars on there, Simon. You recognise most of them.
Most.
You thought that Noomi Rapace was Rooney Mara, which is interesting, because obviously they're both paying the girl with the dragon tattoo, but they are in different versions. So.
But then, you know, I've never seen the girl who played... Well, I have seen, very rarely have I seen Lisbeth Salander. Noomi Rapace not in makeup.
Yes.
So, or not in, like...
The girl makeup.
Gothic makeup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, it's difficult to tell.
Okay.
If you walk down the street, I probably wouldn't even recognise you with it.
Okay. Well, you know, we've got Olivia Wilde on there looking hot. We've got... You know, just lots of great stars. All the big kids, including Anne Hathaway, who's hosting the Oscars, and the lovely James Franco.
Now, you seem to think he's a god at the moment. A god among men.
Well, I can't believe this. So he's Oscar-nominated
for
127 Hours, in which the film rests on him.
Yep.
He is hosting the Oscars, co-hosting them with Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
He is studying for a PhD in English at the same time.
Easy.
He's just written a book. I don't know if you've yet.
Fantastic.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
And now he's going to star on Broadway with Nicole Kidman. I mean, the man is a machine. He was in the Spider-Man trilogy. Just why not? You know, racking those bad boys up. So I don't think he's even 30 yet, is he? So
no, he
really, those are the criteria we need to judge ourselves by as we approach 30. How many of those have you done, Simon?
Not many.
Have you been on Broadway yet? I've got a feeling you auditioned for Broadway.
I might get a little wristband though, which would say WWJF. D. So what would James Franco do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if I'm in a situation where I'm thinking, what should I do? I'll think, what would James Franco do in this? And he might, you know, make a film.
Yeah. Of course, he's playing Allen Ginsberg in Howl as well.
Yeah, rather than a moral compass, it's like a creativity thing. So it can tell me when I should be creative. In this situation, what would James Franco do? What he'd do is paint a picture. That's what he'd do.
Write a poem.
Write a poem. Why not?
Paint my house.
Exactly. There you go.
The dude can do anything.
We've got to create these wristbands.
I've got a feeling he's pretty popular with the ladies.
Indeed. What would James Franco do in this situation? He would score. That's what he'd do. Dirty.
The bouncer is on the door, ready to, you know, sort out any trouble, so check your ego at the door, Simon.
Yeah.
Let's head in and see who's partying this week.
Okay, and we're in. Nice.
Yeah. Dancing.
Feeling that.
Are you dancing like Natalie Portman in Black Swan?
You can see I am.
See you are.
As is that man over there who's our Facebooker of the week.
Oh, it's my brother. Yes, he's quite the ballet dancer. It's Dan Gudgeon.
Well done, Dan. Nice moves.
Yes. He was on Facebook just commenting on the fact that last week we talked about the King's Speech and the fact that my gran had seen it before me, and I was reminiscing about seeing The Matrix with that very same gran, and he was reminiscing about seeing Jurassic Park with that very same gran. You're pretty impressed by that, Simon. I can see by the look on your face.
Both those films are pretty damn good. possibly my favourite films of the last decade.
Of the 90s.
Jesus, 93 is longer than a decade.
Oh,
I am getting old.
You are too old. Okay, so there we go. And Twitterer, who is tweeting?
Well, it's not a person. It's, in fact, an entire centre.
Wow.
The Barbican Centre.
Well done.
I mentioned to them about how, you know, I'm gutted about the fact that Barbican has shut down two of their cinema screens. And it's only the one cinema screen which is going at the moment, which is limiting. But at the same time, they actually tweeted me back and they actually said they're projecting... Nice.
Listening to the music, so I missed the joke.
Projecting Funny. To open those cinemas back up in 2012, which is really good because, you know, Barbican Centre is a great cinema and a great place.
So you're saying this club is now full of everybody who works for the Barbican?
Only the Barbican cinemas.
Right, okay, because I don't know if the club could take that. Interestingly, talking of Twitter, we are approaching our 1,000th tweet. You've got a new phone, so you're doing a lot of tweeting.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get that Housen's tweet. I haven't tweeted for a while. What prize?
You might swoop in there.
Yeah, well, it's got to be a good tweet. I mean, I would say that that tweet has to be the best tweet we've ever written. There's no pressure on you, Simon.
No, not at all.
What prize would you want if you did post that?
A donut.
Okay, all right.
Done. Okay. Then lastly is our blogger of the week, and no other than who is in the club? Mr. Tom Clift.
Oh, hello, Tom Clift. How are you? He's whispering in my ear. Sorry, you can't hear that.
He's got a blog.
He's fine, by the way. He's great.
He's got a blog, which is reviewsbytom.blogspot.com. We'll have the links. All the links for all these Facebookers, Twitterers, blogs are going to be on our website anyway. But, Reviews by Tom. He's got a great website, basically, whereby he actually just does reviews. He's done a few podcast stuff.
What's his most recent one there? Is it The Fighter?
The Fighter. Okay. He seems to be keeping in track with the ones which we've actually watched as well, which I think is quite cool.
Are you sure he's not a pseudonym for you?
No. The Fighter, Black Swan, he saw Unstoppable. We didn't see Unstoppable, have no intention to, nor have we seen
The Tourist. He saw The Tourist, ditto.
You know, so, but there's some great reviews on there, because and he writes for Row 3 as well, which is another great website as well. But the point is that, check that out, that's our blogger of the week, Tom Clift,
and
sir.
They're all having
you
fun.
Have got it.
Yeah, they're all having fun in the club. Well, we better leave now, Simon. We've got other stuff to cover now, so just follow me this way.
London box office. Here it is. Number 5. 127 hours.
Yeah. Actually, the more I think about this, the more I do kind of want to see it. So,
okay.
I probably will see it soon. Nice. You know, particularly how impressed I am by James Franco, which, you know, we'll talk about later on. But the man is pretty much the greatest human being alive. I mean, I don't want to belittle Nelson Mandela, but come on, son.
Have you acted in an Oscar-winning film, Nelson?
No.
You had to be played by Morgan Freeman.
Have you co-hosted the Oscars?
No.
Okay, more on James Franco later. Number 4, Green Hornet. Less on Seth Rogen, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, neither of us are that fussed about watching it. It's slipping down pretty quick, so I don't think it really matters. There's the Green Hornet.
Something that matters even less is Dilemma, number 3. I'm embarrassed that London has gone to see this. I would have hoped they would reject it, but it's obviously been a dilemma for some people.
Well, I think, again, you know, the irony is, like I said, they could have sold it as some Oscar touting thing without any Oscar nominations, bear in mind, because of the cast and because of the because of the cast and because of the director. But
Ron
the fact
Howard.
Of the matter is it's that it's just this stupid rom-com. And the dilemma, apparently, is that what do you do if you find out your best friend's
wife
is cheating on him?
With somebody else.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you do?
Tell him.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
It's a 2-minute film for Simon. Tell
easy.
Him.
Yeah, within 5 minutes. Done. Number 2, King's Speech.
Yeah, still not going to see it.
Oh, if it wins Best Picture?
Probably not.
If it wins Best Picture, you're still not going to watch it. That's not good enough. Oscars are not good enough.
It's not a reason to see it. There are other reasons to see it. I'm not, you know.
There are other reasons to it. It's bloody good. I like it. All We've got that review.
I read Patrick Stewart cried when he saw it. That's the last time he cried.
Patrick Stewart, there we go.
He said
Thank
it was
you.
Perfect. Well done, Patrick.
Picard, well done. Black Swan, number 1.
Brilliant. Yep, still want to see it again. Amazing stuff.
You want to see it again? Really
soon?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I'll see it probably 6 or 7 times.
6 or 7 times. That's because you like lesbianism.
Or 67 times.
67 times?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. No, yeah, great film.
I want to make it clear. The lesbianism isn't really that important. It's a very small part of it. The entire film is essentially a horror film. So,
it is, yeah, like we said. And that's, like I said, that review.
It's not massively sexy.
That review is there from last week, so go back to that if you would like to. Okay.
Check it out.
New releases of the week. We've got 4 to bring
Just
up.
Just dissect them very quickly. The first one is A Little Bit of Heaven. What's your... What do you think A Little Bit of Heaven is, Simon? What would you... Definitely not Kate Hudson.
No, Kate Hudson is in it. Yeah. But more importantly, Gael García Bernal. I've got a funny feeling.
He's selling out, isn't he?
I've got a funny feeling that after he'd done that short in Revolution, I've got a feeling that he is making the money so he can make...
He did Letters to Juliet last year. Yeah. I mean, he was a supporting role in that.
But I think he's starring... Because he is a great film and he's got a great presence. And I think
he's a jolly good-looking chap.
And he is a jolly good-looking chap. And I think he's just getting some money together and he's going to make his own feature film soon
Hopefully,
enough.
He is doing that.
And I think fair enough.
With Diego Luna.
Make some crap. Yeah. I don't mind.
Make some
I'm not going to watch it, but, you know, you make
Maybe
your money,
will.
Sir. And good luck with your own film.
He's on the side of a lot of buses at the moment.
Yeah. Rabbit Hole. Nicole Kidman's Oscar-nominated performance. The film, though, hasn't been nominated for Best Picture, so maybe not that good.
It hangs on her performance, I would guess.
To be honest, very
depressing.
On a different week, I'd watch this, but unfortunately, there's just so many Oscar-nominated things being thrown our way at the moment that I feel like it's probably not going to get a look in. And following the Oscars, where she won't win Best Actress, I doubt. Do you think she'll win it?
Well, maybe.
Is there a chance?
There's a chance. There's always a chance, Simon. I don't know. Natalie Portman is still very young.
I've got no intention of seeing The Blind.
Annette Bening's in there.
I've got no intention of seeing The Blind Side. I've got no intention of seeing Crazy Heart. You know what I mean?
Because you've got no intention of seeing Crazy Heart?
No.
That's a dude.
Yep. I'll watch Lebowski. Again, but I'm not going to watch Crazy Heart. So, I don't know if it really matters. I think, like I said, there's just so many good films that are out at the moment. It's just, you know, that is the least of my concerns.
Is Brighton Rock one of the good films out this week? I don't think it is. It looks all right, but, you know, I mean, this is great source material, Graham Greene's novel. But it's a decent cast. Helen Mirren's in there, of course. John Hurt.
Sam Riley as Pinky.
I'm worried about him.
Richard Attenborough made this character in the original.
We got the mods and the rockers rather than, you know, the racecourse gangs.
I think it seems like it thinks it's a lot better than what it is.
Yeah, I'm not.
So I'm kind of put off by
that. I'm fascinated.
New York, I Love You, after a long delay, has only just been released in England.
2009, so this is basically like from the people that bought you Paris Je T'aime, which is a load of short films, basically with the central theme of Paris and love. Now they've done the same with New York. It's got, obviously, like one of the best casts ever.
That's because they're all, it's like 11 short films, you see, so it's crazy in that regard.
Including Natalie Portman's, she directs, doesn't she, so one of them. The fact that it's waited so long, and I didn't think Paris Je T'aime was that good either, so, you know, it's going to be very uneven. I'm not particularly interested, but to see, you know, I would maybe watch some of them would be interesting. Christina Ricci's in there, is Ryan Reynolds in there? I'm pretty sure he is. Bradley Cooper's definitely in there.
Ethan Hawke, Christina Ricci, Shia LaBeouf, Orlando Bloom, and loads of people in there. It's got pretty bad reviews.
You wouldn't watch it for Valentine's Day? What about a double bill of Paris Je T'aime and New York, I Love You?
And then,
I love you, London.
Can I? London, you mucker.
Yeah. London, brilliant, innit?
Yeah, that's the London one. London, brilliant, innit? Coming out next year, the sequel, part of the triptych.
Triptych.
Okay, I think that's all the stuff we've got.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's it, we're done.
Wow, okay. After this, there's going to be...
Love with I Am Love.
And...
Gift Shops.
Art.
Which we're going to exit through.
Art. Okay, here we are. We're going to do our classic reviews, you would say. The history of cinema in a certain sense.
Yes.
Although we're only going back essentially 12 months here.
Yeah.
What's your first film, Simon? What's the first film on your agenda?
Well, we went on about this a lot back in the day.
Without having seen it, obviously.
Without having seen it, yeah.
That's how we roll.
I think if I remember rightly, we discussed a possible sequel, I Am Love 2.
More Love.
Yeah, we thought that could have been possible. But I actually have managed to see the film.
So you'll be able to tell us if a sequel is possible.
Yeah, and the film is called I Am Love. It's directed by Luca...
Can you do that in Italian?
Io sono amore.
Classic.
Nice. Directed by Luca Guadagnino. I don't know, I think that's Nino. Like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's the best I can do anyway. And it's an independent film, but unlike a lot of independent...
Art house film.
Yeah. But
let's go as far as that, why not?
But it's independent at the same time, and in that regard, what's different about it is obviously a lot of independent films you see is very kind of down and dirty. Obviously, it's quite cheap, and that's what they kind of... because they can afford it. Whereas this is actually showing a very kind of upper-class section of Italian society, whereby the story follows Emma, who's Tilda Swinton's character, and she's basically married into the Ricci family, and they're very affluent, they're very rich, and it shows how when you start off the film where you see her as the housewife and as the kind of mother in the family and how she kind of organises that and how effectively she gets out of that and how
she does. She's looking for a way out, even though she's got the money and the family and the influence.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see a kind of desperation to get out. This is what's quite interesting, is that her character is actually very quiet and very calm and very peaceful, and yet you just kind of see through little glances that how she'd like to get out. And obviously, it doesn't take long before she has an affair with one of her son's friends, Antonio.
Wow. Saucy.
And indeed, and it is very saucy, erotic, sensual. It is. I mean, there's some scenes and stuff in there with this bit when they're making love on this kind of natural field, and the camera just kind of these extreme close-ups of the skin moving and this kind of different textures on the skin, and then it kind of contrasts that with like some of the grass and stuff. So it's like nature and human.
Wow.
Sexy. Very sexy. This is, when we were talking the other week about Blue Valentine, don't take someone to see this. This is a film, you want to see this.
This is a Valentine's Day film. You've seen it essentially a week early.
Yeah.
You should check it out on Valentine's Day, eh?
Yeah, I should have. That would have been a better idea. And I advise other people.
We should have talked about it on the Valentine's episode.
Indeed. That would maybe make
more
sense.
Give us some justification, Simon. Tell us if it's any good. Because it sounds quite good. It sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, no, it is very good. I mean, in some way, it's a similar thing whereby you've got this female strong character in the centre. And there was a comparison made in Sight and Sound to Phaedra You know the
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know Pedro, yeah.
Which I fell asleep when I watched Helen Mirren in that. Yeah. But the point is that, you know, it's similar in that way, and obviously in this very affluent family. It begins in kind of, it's all set in Milan, which is really incredible at the same time. It shows, it starts like The Godfather in some respects, where it shows, starts off with this big family meal. So it shows that, and where you start off and you're introduced to all these different characters, and then before you know it, you're kind of focusing on Emma and her relationship and her life. Effectively, what's interesting is it's very operatic. Okay, it's all very, very, very romantic, and you see like some beautiful architecture. It kind of contrasts these kind of curves of some buildings, and then it will start, kind of cut away and then show some very kind of sharp kind of lines, some square blocks and stuff of other buildings. So it's all about the kind of traditional styles versus this kind of almost this new business and the new starts. And you have this kind of underlying, I think, this business side to it, whereby the old is replaced by the new, and you kind of see that amongst the affair which she's conducting as well. So you not only do
well, the affair is replacing the old with the new as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. There you go. You don't even have to watch it. You know it already.
Yeah.
The point is that I think what's great about this film is that visually the camera is just stunning. I mean, the way the camera is moved, it's just, you know, the first time she kisses Antonio is out of focus, so it's almost disorientating, and it's just in that way it's really expressive. But then, you know, at the same time, the story has all these multiple layers, like we discussed. I mean, Sarah was mentioning how it's stuff about socialism and about how socialism is a part of it. Obviously, Emma's character is Russian, so you have all these different subtexts to it as well.
So is Tilda Swinton speaking Russian and Italian here?
I think she doesn't actually speak much Russian. I mean, as I understand, she learnt both languages for the role.
Wow.
But she and she speaks Italian, and they very couple of times they talk about her Russian name. But I don't remember vividly when she spoke Russian. But it's all subtitled, so maybe she did, and I just thought it was Italian. I don't know.
Okay. But she's a very beautiful woman, you know, in a very beautiful life.
Yes.
Kind of banging out against it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And like, you know, so you've got these different sides to it, and effectively all these things make up an incredibly visual feast. I mean, and that's a literal sense, because a lot of it is to do with food as well. And when you see...
There's food in it.
Oh my God.
Brilliant.
Believe me, it's like succulent prawns.
So this sounds like quite an expensively made foreign art house film. I mean, it's got all the classic ingredients, the sex, the oppressiveness, the subtitles, obviously. It sounds like classically... in that sense.
Yeah.
Is it good? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I think Sarah enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
I think it's got a certain... what is it when certain people like it more than others? Basically, I think women would like it more because...
It's skewed towards women.
Yeah, I think... And that's not a bad thing. I think I just couldn't relate in that regard. But I did... I mean, you can't fault it. And I think the success it's garnered is because it doesn't... It knows, like you said, it knows what it is in terms of being an art house film, and it just exploits every single facet of it. And it just makes this incredible kind of... You want to get into this really beautiful film, you can just get stuck into this one. And
it's good.
And it is very good. Very good.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll move now from the beauty of I Am Love to the gritty urban sprawl of Exit Through the Gift Shop, which is the Banksy film. We can kind of describe it as that. We can kind of describe it as a documentary. It's definitely been nominated for Best Documentary at the Oscars.
Up
Came out last
Wasteland
year.
Wasteland and Inside Job. And
Restrepo,
yeah.
And... Gasland. So two lands in there.
Two lands.
And this is Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Or Banksy Land, as some people could.
Ah, or make. Disneyland.
Disneyland. Oh, nice.
Thanks very much. Okay, so Simon, you're an art teacher.
Yeah.
You know about art.
Yeah.
Give us a brief synopsis of the film, which obviously deals with art.
Okay, so we've got two kind of stories going on. On the one side, it's showing a little bit of the history of street art, but more importantly, it is focusing on the artist that is Mr. Brainwash, or Thierry Guaita. Guaita, I think it is.
Thierry, I don't know what. Reese fans narrates it in his lovely Welsh voice, and he keeps calling him Terry, but I think his name's Thierry, as in Thierry Henry.
Yeah,
I don't know.
French.
That was kind of weird, disconcerting.
But it basically shows how Thierry went from. Capturing all the footage of the street artist at the time when street art was kind of established and became successful, and then how then he himself became a street artist and how he became successful towards the end of the film.
Okay.
But there's a lot of
stuff in between.
Hypocrisy and conflict.
I mean, the film is split into two very distinct halves, I felt.
Yeah.
The first half is Thierry filming the birth of the street art. Well, not necessarily the birth, but a part of the street art movement.
Yeah.
And then, you know, towards the end of that half, he meets Banksy and, you know, he becomes friends with Banksy. And so he films a lot of Banksy stuff. And then he tries to make a film of it, and Banksy says to him, no, I'm going to make this film because you suck at this. You go off and try something else. And so then in the second half, Thierry tries to become Mr. Brainwash, his own a street artist, essentially, and Banksy basically disappears from the film. I mean, he's not really in the film because
he's not in it much at all, really.
Well, because you don't, I mean, you know, they change his voice and they black out his face, so it's not, you know, you don't know if it is even really Banksy. I remember looking at his hands and thinking, are those the hands of Banksy? They look kind of rough and ready, rather than, well, but, you know, he is a rough and ready guy. But anyway, so in the second half, it's all about Thierry.
Yeah.
From an artistic point of view, how did you... I mean, you know, we can separate it into two halves if we need to, but how did you find the film?
I really enjoyed it. I think it raises some really interesting questions about modern art and contemporary art, and about the big question, which is, what is art? And that's
Do you have an answer now?
No, I think, if anything, it kind of points out that, by the end of the film, what is art is actually not the point, because, obviously, Terry's work, at the end, it is art. Is it any good? No.
Not in my personal opinion,
crap.
No.
Let's be honest.
I mean, but he's still...
brutally honest, it's crap. And that's the point. Whereas street art, that is art in a much more purer sense, I guess. But that, or I would say it's better art. But, you know, that's just my preference. But the point is that whether it is or it isn't art is not the point. Because all the stuff we're seeing is art, and that's not a bad thing. That's good.
Yeah, so it is art.
That doesn't mean it's good.
No, that's the difference between good or bad art.
Do you...
Is it art? Yeah, like when Banksy puts Guantanamo Bay people in Disneyland, that's art?
Yeah.
Okay, so Mr. Brainwash...
It's all art.
It's all art. There's no not art in... It's the film art.
Yes.
The film's art.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, alright. So, I mean, the problem for me here, I know you said you like it a lot, I really like the first half where Thierry comes across as kind of this likeable loser, but really committed to capturing everything.
Bit obsessed.
Really obsessed, but in an interesting way, and he meets some really interesting people, including Banksy, but it's not just about Banksy.
No, it's not. Shepherd Fairey.
Yeah, great
space,
Shepherd Fairey.
Space Invader.
Yeah, and some people are willing to have their face on camera and some aren't, and he captures some really interesting art.
It's great to see them at work. I mean, I thought, seeing how street art is made, seeing how they're done, I'm assuming it's wallpaper paste they're just pasting them up with.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm not going to...
Why not? At your school.
Yeah.
Some of it is spray, you know, like Bart Simpson uses, graffiti cans.
Yeah.
But anyway, and some of it, I mean, when you talk about the art in that first half, some of it is very, you know, interesting. It looks very good and is socially and politically interesting.
Yes.
Like when Banksy paints an elephant, for example, and Shepherd Fairey does his Obama picture,
His
Andre the Giant picture.
You love that.
And they put it all over the place. So that half of the film I found really interesting. I was really compelled. Thierry kind of takes a back seat. He's just filming.
Yeah.
In the second half, his character develops into this Mr. Brainwash, and he becomes a dick.
Yeah.
I really did not like the second half of this film. But basically Banksy says... Because, you know, him and Banksy are friends at the end of the first half of the film. And then essentially, I think at the end of the second half, Banksy disowns him. And Shepherd Fairey disowns him and says, sometimes you give people the opportunity to do art and it blows up in your face.
And they abuse that position.
And Thierry abuses a position. He, you know, mortgages his house and then makes $1 million by selling his paintings because people fall for it, and Thierry becomes a megalomaniac. And I don't know at this point if this is fake or if he really did become that much of an idiot.
See, I thought when I watched it, I was prepared to have some kind of point in the film where it was going to like twist and just I'd completely take a different direction, and I'd be like, wow, and it would like, I wouldn't know what's going on. But actually, it's quite linear in that regard. I mean, I kind of feel like it's about this guy, and we follow where this guy goes and what he does, Terry. You know? And they say right at the start, first thing Banksy says, I mean, the first credit is it's a Banksy film. So there's no lies about that. And then in the next section after that, he says, you know, straight away he says, we're going to make a film about me, but in fact we decided to make it about Terry because a bit more interesting. And then that's where... So there's no kind of... I didn't feel like it suddenly went in a completely different direction. Though, you know...
I felt it changed halfway through. I felt the second
I know what you're saying in that it's definitely split into two different halves, but I just kind of feel like I went in under the impression from what people had told me that there is suddenly a complete shift in the entire purpose of the film. Like I'd suddenly be completely like, oh my God! Like, they were showing me one thing and then it turned out to be something completely false. And the whole idea about it being fake and or real would be quite obvious that it's fake. But actually, I think it's real. I mean, if anything, the Mr. Brainwash or Terry's character, Terry, the guy, apparently designed Madonna's best greatest hits cover art. And I'm trying to think. Well, I don't really see why that would be a part of the hoax. I mean, it was just a little tacked on at the end. I don't see why that's not true. So I don't think it's a hoax. I mean, I think it's true.
Maybe parts of a hoax. His wife disappears for long periods, and there's some issue about where he gets the money from. You know, maybe it's from his shop, but he does seem to have a. I mean, you know, when you see how many tapes he has. I mean, the point is that Thierry. He gets so much stuff, he gets so much footage, and he gets so much art in the second half, but he has no artistic brain. He cannot organise that into a coherent strategy, so that when you see the trailer for what his film would have been, it's completely horrendous. You see what Banksy has done, has made a coherent... intriguing film,
but I've got to tell you, I thought it was great. I thought his video was just
really.
It's just a battering.
Could you watch 90 minutes?
No. I couldn't watch 90 minutes. Fine, but for that little bit, I just felt like my head was just being battered with these images.
I thought it was awful.
It was quite a nice feeling. I thought it was art. Actually,
that's the point. Bad art. That's the point at which I thought, okay, maybe this is fake because nobody could make something as bad as that. And then you know, when you see his art, nobody could make art as bad.
More importantly, his art wasn't his. He got other people to do the art.
I think essentially he took the Andy Warhol Marilyn Monroe picture, he put Michael Jackson's face on it.
That's intelligent.
He put about 12 different people's faces on the same... You know, that's awful. That's just awful. So for me, it's a good film, but, you know, I'm pretty sure it's a documentary, not 100% sure. Yeah. Banksy is in it more than I expected, I have to say.
He was in it less than I expected.
Okay, well, this is where we're fundamentally disagreeing. But, it's a difficult second half. It does get kind of tedious because unless they're making a point about, you know... I mean, they are making a point about the nature of art, but unless they're making a point about what an idiot this guy is, it's a shame because you kind of like him in the first half and then I fundamentally fell out with him in the second half.
I thought it was a great film, and I think it's definitely one to get a conversation started about art and modern art and stuff like that.
Yeah, we should continue our conversation about art. I don't know if we've used the word art enough in this review.
I'm just saying,
definitely art.
It's good. It's a good documentary.
Art documentary?
Yeah, art-imentary. Okay, and that was our show for this week.
Yeah, great show, Simon. No?
Indeed. We're back outside the Clapham Picture House. Next week is February 13th, and Valentine's Day is February 14th. So, we are going to be reviewing the following films.
True Grit.
Not really about love, but it's about a child looking for her dad, or the killer of her dad.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we've got another story called Inside Job, and that's...
A documentary.
Not about love either, that's not really...
Not really
Valentine's Day based.
Finally...
Animal Kingdom, a story about an Australian crime family.
Okay, so...
Love in a family sense.
Like The Fighter, which we talked about this week.
Maybe.
It's all interconnected.
But nothing really to do with love.
Okay, so look forward to that next week, I would say. There's more great reviews after the great reviews of this week.
Effectively an anti-Valentine's Day podcast next week.
Okay, well, don't advertise it like that, Simon.
No, okay. But watch the films, folks, and then tune in next week. As it's going, and every story has an end. Every battle has its glory. Simon and Joe podcast is part of screeninsight.co.uk. See you next week.